were the tapes in relation to Moses?
I think we left on kind of a non-serious note. What would have happened if he'd laid his rod down? We talked about he might have had a hole at the wrong end of the tape. But there is something here in verse 4. We finished with verse 3 last week. Exodus, the fourth chapter, verse 4 now. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thy hand and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. I just wonder, some of you have been around these mountain rattlesnakes for a while. Would you dare reach down and pick one up by the tail? Uh-uh. You're going to pick up a snake, and you're afraid of snakes. You better be smart and grab it right behind the head. Don't grab it anywhere. You're going to pick it up. You want to grab it in the right place. You grab it by the tail, you're likely to get a little nip. Yes. Right behind the head. Huh? Well, that's, I'll go along with that, too, Phil. That's... No, I agree with you, Phil. Leave them alone. But I guess the worst place, if you're going to pick it up by the tail. Okay? Yet this is the instructions that God had given to Moses. And you have to think, now here's Moses. He's got 40 years out there in that desert. And I'm sure he's familiar with snakes. The instructions that God gives probably are a little contrary-wise to what Moses would do. But on the other hand, Moses has a lesson to learn here. And I don't know whether you pick it up. He just plain doesn't want to follow God's instructions, and this is one of the problems in all of his lifetime. He just doesn't want to follow God to the letter. He's always trying to do something just, not always, no. I'll back off that statement. Quite often, he gets exasperated and wants to do things just a little differently than God outlines. In some ways, yes. Although Abraham had his problems, if you remember. He was hesitant and backwards, too, in some respects, and was timid and afraid of what might happen. He didn't initially, in his experience, didn't have the faith that is attributed to him throughout his lifetime. All right. So, what's the instructions? He's supposed to cast his rod on the ground. It turns into a snake, and Moses took off, and then the Lord stops him and says, now, put your hand down and take it by the tail. I wonder, really. Now, it's obvious that Moses has a fear of snakes. We were talking this afternoon about fear of snakes, you know. It does take something on the part of the man here to follow God's instructions. A lot of times, you know, God asks us to do things that we think that we're not quite qualified for and are prepared to do or even appear quite sensible to us. And yet, if... All right, I'll give you a good one. We all have to go through this. Salvation by the blood of Christ and the grace of God and that and nothing else. Nothing on your part. Yet, isn't it natural for each one of us to try to do something, to earn our salvation if we can? Isn't that the thing that's taught throughout the world and all the other religions? Earn your way. Be good. Comply with this. Follow this instruction, and you'll get there. Do something. And God says no. He goes contrary to the normal human mode of thinking and says, you accept what I give to you freely. You accept it as freely as I give it. And then it's yours. Okay. Now, he did it. And it became a rod in his hand. Why? So that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob hath appeared unto thee. Now remember, this is the way he was known. He didn't have a name prior to this burning bush experience that they knew him by. He was simply the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. So, God is covering all the bases here. He's to be identified as the I Am, and of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. All right. And verse 6, and the Lord said furthermore unto him, now put thine hand under thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. And he said, put thy hand under thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again, and plucked it out of his bosom, and behold, it was turned again as his other hand. All right. Cover your hand up, stick it inside your shirt, pull it out, and it's all leprous. And I would imagine it was leprous to the extent that there couldn't have been any faking or any doubting about what it was. And he says, put it back in again. Take it out. It's just as good as the other hand. How many times he could have done that, I don't know. But it's the sign that was being given to him as an indication of God's power and God's being with him. And verse 8, and it shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that thou wilt believe, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. And it shall come to pass, if they will not believe also these two signs, neither hearken unto thy voice, that thou shalt take of the water of the river and pour it upon the dry land. And the water which thou takest out of the river shall become blood upon the dry land. Now, I'll tell you something else in relation to that. It's quite odd. It just couldn't just appear to be colored water. You know, I used to be fascinated with some of these little magical tricks, you know, where you... Oh, I've seen him use as an illustration in church where you maybe put some blue ink in a tumbler, you know, of water, and it turns all blue, and you drop something else into it, and it clears up, or it turns another color, and, you know, as a little kid, you're greatly fascinated by those things. I don't think it was that kind of a, let's say, cheap trick at all. He dipped out water out of the river, and he poured it back up on the dry land, and when it hit the dry land, it became blood. And I'm sure that there was no mistaking of that for anything but blood. Okay? Not ketchup. I don't know if they had ketchup. But it's blood. Okay? All right. Come to verse 10. Now, a little question here in my mind. You're entitled to your own opinion. I don't know whether there was a little interruption in the conversation here, whether they took a break for lunch. I'm being silly, and you know that. What I'm trying to say is whether it was a normal passage time and then Moses comes along with his objection, or whether he actually interrupted God. And I am of the opinion that he just literally interrupted God almost right at this point and said, what did he say? Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of slow tongue. Okay, here's Moses. What are you picking on me for, Lord? You know, I don't have a bunch of fancy words. I'm not a great speaker. I'm not eloquent. I haven't been in the past, and since we started this conversation, I haven't changed any. Now, one of my notes here says, let me see if I can find it and read it to you exactly. That word heretofore can be interpreted to mean since yesterday, nor since the third day. In other words, you get the impression this conversation wasn't just a matter of minutes, but a day or two or three. All right? What else was being said, I don't know. It's not recorded for us. And I'll tell you something else. If it's not recorded for us, we don't need to know. I suspect that Moses received a great deal of instruction from the Lord in relation to what he would be expected of him. That also kind of blows my pet theory that maybe Moses interrupted, so maybe I'll have to change my opinion in the light of that. You think what you want to do. In any case, when it comes down to it, he's saying, I can't do it. I'm not eloquent. I don't have the fancy words. I'm not quick of thought. I don't have all the answers on my lips. I was slow of speech before, and I'm slow of speech now. All right, what's God say? And the Lord said unto him, who has made man's mouth, or who maketh the dumb, or deaf, or seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. Now here's Moses' objection, and God's answer. Let me tell you something. Maybe we can justify objecting to what God asked of us the first time. I told you once before, I think that God permits a degree of questioning of his way. I don't think he expects us to go totally blind. But when God speaks to us and says, hey, I made you. I made you able to speak. I've also made the dumb. I've made those who are able to hear, and I've made the deaf. And I know the cures since I made them. Doesn't make any difference what your abilities are. It doesn't make any difference what your skills are. I made you. I put you together. I know how to make you work. All you have to do is go ahead and attempt the job. I suspect, again, opinion, mark it off, set it aside up there, but if Moses had obeyed God, the stories we have in the scriptures might be somewhat different. I think he might have been one of the greatest preachers ever, and we might have had a lot more recorded, and God might have been able to work a little bit differently. But what does Moses do? Verse 13. Oh, he's really going to cry the blues now. And he said, oh, my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him who thou wilt send. In other words, you pick who you want to send. Not me. Okay? Not me. Somebody else. You pick them. You pick anybody you want. It doesn't know. What he doesn't seem to want to recognize is God had already picked him. God had already killed his only argument. And now he's just flat refusing. That's actually what he's doing. He's flat refusing. And what happens? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron a Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well, and also because he come forth to meet thee, and when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him, and put words in his mouth, and I will be with thy mouth, and with his mouth, and will teach you what ye shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people, and he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou shalt be to him instead of God. And thou shalt take this rod in thy hand therewith, wherewith thou shalt do signs. Now he's angry. Realize what he's taken away from Moses, in a sense. He says, all right, you've made your objections. You've got a brother who is eloquent, who is a great speaker. You don't want to do it. I'm going to let him do it. But you know what's going to happen, Moses? You can't get away, because you're going to have to put the words in his mouth. And in the end, he's going to be parroting what you tell him. And I'm still going to work through you. I'm going to use you whether you want to or not. And he's not going to speak anything unless you put the words in his mouth, and I'll put them in yours. Moses lost a lot of this. You realize that. He had to go through his brother. He had to go through Aaron. He couldn't do it on his own. And God wouldn't let him do it from there on. It had to be through Aaron. Okay. Now, take your rod and get going. Verse 18. And Moses went and returned to Jethro his father-in-law and said unto him, let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they yet be alive. And Jethro said to Moses, go in peace. I have a feeling here Jethro suspected more of what God was doing with Moses than Moses knew. There was no objection here. And he sends him in peace. And you remember, he was a priest of God, even though he wasn't a Hebrew. And then the Lord said unto Moses, while he was in Midian, go, return unto Egypt, and all the men are dead which sought thy life. And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them up on an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt, and Moses took the rod of God in his hand. Something else you might look at there. Kind of dawned on me when I was looking at this late this afternoon. He didn't take his wife and his sons and set them on asses. They rode, at least I think it was triple. I think he had two sons at this time, if I'm not mistaken. All three on one animal. And probably Moses walked, I'm not sure. But he didn't go away a rich man. He wasn't going away with a lot of possessions. He took the bare minimum that he could get along on. All right. Verse 21, and the Lord said unto Moses, when thou goest to return unto Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh which I have put in thy hand, and I will harden his heart, and he shall not let the people go. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. And I say unto thee, let my son go, that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. I'm afraid if I was Moses, I'd have backed off then. He's got kind of a hopeless task in the flesh. God's warning him ahead of time. He's supposed to go and ask to have the Israelites freed, and he's told that Pharaoh's not going to do it. That he's going to meet a Pharaoh with a hard heart. Someone who just won't pay any attention to the prophet of God and the word of God, and who's going to laugh at it and ridicule it and refuse it, etc. and so forth. I think there's something here we ought to watch out for. We ought to see here just exactly how well Moses follows this specific instruction, because he's told to go and perform the wonders and to give Pharaoh warning. Israel is my firstborn, says God, my first son. And if you don't let him go, remember now, we told you before, when we use the term Israel, we're not speaking of the flesh, we're speaking of the spiritual. And so God is looking from the viewpoint of spiritual things. And that which he loves, very special, spiritual Israel, the Israel that's embodied in the flesh of the people living in Egypt at that time. But when he's talking about the people who are going to Balaam, sons of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay? The flesh against the spiritual. Now, he's told to go and give that warning. He says that Israel is my firstborn. If you don't let him go, then God, I am going to take your firstborn. And we know that happened. Whether or not, and I think we'll have to look ahead a little while, in a week or two, or three, and see if Moses gives that warning just exactly the way he should. All right? Keep it in mind, though, as we study ahead. Now, verse 24. Sometimes I wonder exactly why this is put in there, and it takes a little thinking. And it came to pass, by the way, in the end, that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. Who's he talking about? Moses. Now, why would the Lord want to kill Moses? It's puzzling in that spot. But he has two sons who haven't been circumcised. This is the mark of the Israelite. He's going back now, not as a son of Pharaoh, as he was known in Egypt, but as an Israelite. He's bringing two of his sons, and they're not circumcised. And these are older boys by now, early teenagers, is apparently from what the commentaries say. And he doesn't, the word here doesn't give very much in the way of detail, but apparently, quite possibly, all right, again, opinion, put in quotes, examine it for what it's worth. In this possibly 3 days of instruction that God gave Moses, there must have been instruction in relation to the preparation that Moses should have made for himself and his family before he went. And that would include the reminder that his sons, his Israelites, must be circumcised. And Moses, either in his haste or in his absent-mindedness, or maybe purposely, maybe figuring, well, this is something I can get away with. These are, you know, it'd be like me taking George and David, 24 and 18, or 19, almost 20, and saying, hey, fellas, it's time to circumcise you. You know, they're older boys. They resist that a little bit now, I think. This is apparently the position that Moses was in. Maybe he was just a little plain chicken about proposing it. From the results that we see as we go ahead here in a few minutes, it would appear that his wife, he discussed this matter with his wife. And so I'm inclined to think in my own mind that he purposely neglected the instructions that God apparently had given him. Now, there's a lot of opinion in there. The fact of the matter is, what we have here is God is angry with Moses over a matter. And that matter, it seems to be solved in the matter of, in the way that his wife solves it. Let's see, we have only three or four verses here. It came to pass, by the way, in the end, that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. Then Zipporah took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son and cast it at his feet and said, surely a bloody husband art thou to me. So let him go. Then she said, a bloody husband thou art because of the circumcision. Now, you have to look at this. Apparently, this is one of the manifestations of God in the flesh. We have a number of them in Genesis. Because Moses doesn't do the job. but Moses' wife. And she faces God. And, you know, I kind of wonder about the tone in which she approaches God. Here's the Lord meeting Moses with the intent to kill him in Zipporah. Does the job that Moses is supposed to do, and when she says, cast it at his feet, I get the impression at the feet of God. Someone had Moses bound? Well, all right. That's, again, a possibility, but, you know, God doesn't need to bind a man to kill him. All right. That's one interpretation of it that would be perfectly acceptable. Probably makes more sense than anything I'd come up with. That makes sense. Because maybe Moses didn't enforce the instructions at the early age of the children. As an Israelite, remember, this was the covenant mark of the nation of Israel, was circumcision. And it was required of every male Israelite, period. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eighth day, I think. And, you know, that's a lot less painful to a baby than it is to a young man. All right. In any case, the one thing I get out of all of this, God, once again, is establishing his sovereignty, his right to rule and to command, and his intent to follow through with what he says. And Moses is learning a lesson of obedience here, which seems to be an awfully hard lesson for him. Moses likes to get himself in the way quite often. We'll see a lot of that as we go through this. All right, verse 27. And the Lord said unto Aaron, go into the wilderness to meet Moses. And he went and met him in the mount of God and kissed him. And Moses told Aaron all of the words of the Lord who had sent him and all the signs which he had commanded him. Now, as we go along, the next verse is a paragraph, and we find Moses and Aaron working together. We have no record of any conversation or argument on the part of Aaron. Now, Aaron gets Moses into trouble a number of times, all right? How well Moses instructed him, I don't know. How much of the instruction he received from Moses and understood, I don't know. The sincerity of his obedience in relation to what God had told Moses, I don't know. The fact of the matter is, Moses is stuck with. Moses had refused flatly to do the job that God had given him. And he's going to suffer for it. He's got Aaron on his hand. I don't know about you, but a lot of times when there's a job to be done, I'd much rather do it than give it to somebody that I think is going to botch it up. It's a hard thing for me to do. I've got a bad reputation around the plant. It's been a lesson I've had to learn to sit on my hands and tell somebody else to do the job and then see if they do it right. Otherwise, I'm never going to get anything done. I'll try to do too much. It doesn't work. Yeah, let George do it, right. And I've caught some of them imitating me because I'll make a point when I'm giving instructions in a machine, put my hands in my pockets like this, see? Because if I got my hands out and I start touching that machine, I'm in problem. You know, I've got a problem. I'll say, adjust that, fix this, and turn that back, you know? And I'll catch some of them imitating me behind my back, you know, and I think it's a big joke. Once in a while I look at the square at them, I see it, you know, I have to frown and look mean, but they know that if I get my hands out of my pockets and get them on a tool, why, they can sit back and watch me do it, you know. And I've had to learn not to do that. But here's Moses, verse 29. Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel, and Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses, and did the signs in the sight of the people. Now, I want to pause there. The next verse says, the people believed. But you remember, he had three signs. The rod, the leprosy, and the blood. And I know that a good student of the Bible could draw you parallels or meanings from each of those. You know, the blood and the leprosy and the snake. But he had to perform all three. Those people weren't as easy as it might appear in the scriptures to convince. I'm sure, quite positively, he threw the rod down the ground and changed into a snake, and those people standing around watching, the elders of Israel, they were probably a little shook about it, just about the same way Moses was. And Moses reached down and grabbed it by the tail and picked it up, and it became a rod again. And he, yes?
Did Moses grab it by the tail?
That's the instructions that God gave him.
And did he follow him?
I would think he must have, otherwise he might have got bit. Well,
he did all the signs,
and
he put forth his hand and taught.
Yeah, and I strongly suspect he did it. Yeah, if you don't do things the way God tells you, you don't get God's results. All right, I'll say that from practice and from observation. Okay.
I just wondered if he caught it in the back of the head.
Well, no, I think he must have grabbed it by the tail. I don't know whether he had puncture marks in his hand, though, to learn the lesson or not. He might have, you know. None of that's recorded. We don't know. It makes interesting guessing, but the fact of the matter is he threw the rod on the ground, reached down, apparently grabbed it by the tail according to instructions, because it changed back to a rod. If he hadn't grabbed it there, I suspect he'd have had a live snake in his hand. Okay? Then that started a little bit, but they probably poo-pooed that a little bit. So he stuck his hand in his shirt, pulled it out, all covered with leprosy, maybe the bones showing through and the whole bit. Sorry if you just had supper, but you know, think of leprosy. Just how bad it can look, the descriptions that we've had of it. And, what kind of trick is this? And so he put it probably right up under the nose of each one of them, let them see it. And then they could believe their own eyes, and they'd seen a little bit of leprosy, I'm sure. And by that time, you know, they're shying away from it. They're ready to leave. They don't want to get close. And sticks it back, brings it out. It's all clean. Looks just like the other hand. They come back and look at it, and maybe at that time, with a the most courageous one felt his fingers to make sure they were all right. Yeah, okay. Well, that's some kind of a fancy trick. Then he takes him down to the river, gets a big bucket, starts throwing water up on the dry land, and it turns to blood. And he probably, I would suspect, again, opinion, mark it up, throw it away, it doesn't count for a hill bean. He probably had to throw up a number of buckets. All right? But in the end, God gave him the number of signs that he would have to perform to get the results he'd have to get. And he got the agreement of the people. And the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel, and that he had looked upon their afflictions, then they bowed their heads in worship, and I don't think there's a wasted word in there. I have a feeling that at this time, the nation of Israel as a whole, now we will forget about individuals who maintain the faith. We know that God has always had his saints in reserve who remain faithful. He's always had his handful. But the nation of Israel as a whole, I am strongly inclined to think they have given up the worship of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Again, the scriptures don't tell us all that went on. We don't know how much talking God had to do through Moses to Aaron, to the people. But I suspect there was something, yes?
All of this really.
I'm going to give you a quick answer off the top of my head, yes. Yeah, I don't have any indication anywhere that any remnant had gone outside, because the entire family of Jacob moved in, and there's no record of any of them coming out. There were other members of Isaac's family who weren't Israelites. I mean, Jethro was, you know, distantly related. And they were out, but the sons of Israel, the descendants of them, apparently all were in Egypt. Now, I don't think he had to get the whole, what was it, 1 million of them? Or 4 million of them, or whatever it was, together and do this. Only the elders, the leaders. And then, after all of this, after the conversation that was necessary took place, then they bowed their heads and worshiped. And in this instance, I'm sure they worshiped the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The great I am. Okay, and we talked about that name. But as we go along, we'll see how many ways they manage to find or fail God. All right, let's move a little bit into chapter 5. We go ahead. Mm-hmm. Sure.
The sign of leprosy, the heart will be sensed for what we are. The hands for what we do. What we are, that ultimately we do. And we think of the references, it is a sign of Luke 6, 43 to 45. The two signs, rod and hand, speak of preparation for service. One, consecration, like a test to take an up for God. Two, the hand that holds the rod of God's power must be a true hand weighed by new heart.
Well, I can buy that. On the other hand, there's a great many students of Bible typology that will tell you that the snake is a definite sin, a type of Satan and sin. Leprosy is a type of sin. So you get that into the God's power, you've got a problem. Blood, we know what that stands for. That's why I avoided it, because I didn't. Yeah, you could probably build a lot of good lessons through it. Yeah, they let that out. They ignored it. There's an awful lot you could get into in that. All right. Chapter 5. And afterward, in other words, the people had a little time of worship. Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness." Now, if you go way back into chapter 3, you remember where that's the specific request that God had told Moses to make, verse 18 in chapter 3. Although it seems to be worded differently, and considering the pattern of scriptures, I get the distinct impression that if he had worded exactly as God had said, it would have been recorded here that way. And so I take it as being a little bit different than what God had asked. I'll agree with that. On the other hand, when God is giving his word, it's totally within his power, and I think within his intent to preserve the accuracy of it. Admittedly, you get a lot of preachers like me who goof it up sometimes. They shouldn't. As far as the word here is concerned, though, I think it accurately records what God requested of Moses, and it accurately records what Moses, at the request of God, requested of Pharaoh, and there are some minor differences there. At least he says, "Let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness." They're supposed to go out and sacrifice. And Pharaoh said unto them, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go." What's that mean to me? I don't care about the God you worship. In effect, I've got my own gods. I have my Egyptian gods and your gods. Think your people have been here 400 years and I haven't seen anything from them. And I wonder if that's a testimony of the church before the world today. The younger generation looking at the church and saying, a lot of them, and literally there's a lot of them turning to Christ, but as a whole, looking at the church today, what they think is the church, and saying, I haven't seen anything from you. Look at your history. You don't tell me anything. You talk a great story, but you don't live it. Ouch. Okay? Sure. All right. And they said, remember, just two of them, Moses whispering in the ear of Aaron, "The God of the Hebrews hath met with us. Let us go, we pray thee, 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice unto the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword." Is that what he told them? You let us do it. Or Israel, as my first son, if you won't let him go, I'm going to take your... He didn't put it in here, and that's where it belongs. And the king of Egypt said unto them, "Wherefore do you, Moses and Aaron, let the people from their works get you into your burden?" And Pharaoh said, "Behold, the people of the land now are many, and ye make them rest from their burden." They've been taking a day off. Ever since you come back, you've been disrupting that construction project. Your people have been milling around and talking about all these things you've been feeding in their ears, and my civic projects are all falling apart. Now, what's he say? 6. And Pharaoh commanded the same day the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, "Ye shall no more give the people straw to make brick as heretofore. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And the tail of the bricks which they did make hereto, ye shall lay upon them. Ye shall not diminish aught thereof, for they be idle. Therefore they cry, saying, Let us go and sacrifice to our God. Let their more work be laid upon the men, that they may labor therein, and let them not regard vain words. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm going to get it back. You owe me something, because it had a time of vacation, not tending to business. Now I'm going to get it back. And some of the archaeologists say you can see the distinct mark in some of the construction projects where this happened, because there turned out to be less straw on the bricks in certain areas because the people had to gather themselves and still had the same quota to get. Now, how accurate that is, I don't know, but that's what I've heard. They can actually see the line and see a part of a course go up, and all of a sudden the content of the bricks in relation to the straw that's embedded in them is changed. Okay, I think we'll stop there. Getting to be that time, we'll pick up with verse 10 next time. And that'll be about 2 weeks, because a week from tonight, we'll have the people from the camp up there. That's in the Midpines area, isn't it? And they'll be here with slides and music and the whole bit. All right?